We're going over to the book of Jude again. I'm going to try to bring a closure onto this this little book. I didn't think we'd be here that long, actually. But to tell the truth, something kept coming up this week. I kept saying, okay, God, what would you like to have shared at the church? What can, always looking for something to talk about. And three people told me the same thing, and that was people that I talked to on the telephone. They all said, God told me, God showed me, God has directed me. And then every time I turned on radios, televisions, anything like that would come up, it would be the same thing. And I'm going, oh yeah, oy vey, not that again. That's why I put the same old chestnut down for the title, because I'm going, man, how many times, I've surely spoken on this before. And it was like, yeah, well, and I'm going, I am going to do the book of Jude. I'm going to finish it. And wouldn't you know, when I got right down to it, there it was in the book of Jude. Folks, you're going to hear it. But lucky you, it's not going to be heard till the last. So, what this guy Jude is talking about here is he says that he wanted to talk about the common salvation toward all Christians, but he felt it necessary to talk about, verse 4, certain persons who have crept in unnoticed, who were long before marked out for condemnation, ungodly persons who turn the grace of our God into licentiousness and deny our only Master and Lord. He is wanting to... And to tell the truth, folks, it's the same way today. There's a lot of times we'd like to talk about something different and be positive all the time and, you know, get out there and say, rah, 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 we got it. But there are times that we need to point out facts. And there are people, there have been people, and there are now people who have crept into the church. Now, I don't know if any of you people are creepers or not. Most of you walk boldly in, but there might be a few people here who have crept into this church also. But people are creeping in and have always came into the church of Jesus Christ. A lot of times unnoticed, they just drifted in, they became part of the group. And then he starts this litany, and I'm not going to go down and read the whole book of Jude to you, but we'll be here a lot longer than what I even want to be. But he starts pointing out certain groups of people and naming names, and he is comparing these certain people who have crept in to the bad guys in the Old Testament. Being Jewish, he calls upon all the Old Testament bad people, and he keeps saying, so every time I bring up these bad people, keep in mind he's saying, these certain people are like them. These certain people are like that one. These certain people are like that one. These certain people are like that one. These certain people are like this one. So I'm not going to, I hope I don't say every time, I might. These certain people, he talks about not all people who came out of the Exodus are like these certain people. They were unbelievers. They walked out with God, but they really didn't trust Him. They came out because there was a lot of noise, a lot of hoopla, a lot of gold and silver traded hands, by the way. On the day that the Israelites walked out, their neighbors handed them a lot of gold. Read it in the Old Testament. They said, can we have some gold? And their neighbors said, yeah, take the gold. Get out of here. Take the silver. Get out of here. Take my wife. Get out of here. You know, they were quite willing to give a lot of stuff to get those people out. And just because of the hoopla, a lot of people joined in. And it says a mixed group came out of Israel. Now, out of that group that came out of Egypt, don't think it was just the Gentiles that was causing troubles. There were a lot of bad Jewish people who caused trouble, and we'll name at least one of them later on in this list. But by the way, after the mixed crowd came out, including the Gentiles, and it just says that, after that point, they're never referred to as a mixed group of people again. It's just all the Israelite nation, all mixed together, and the Gentiles joined right in, and they became part of the Israelite people. There is no point in Exodus or any of the other books where God separated those particular people out and said, well, they're not my people. They all came out together. So, God was very welcoming, but he said, these people will not make it into the land of promise, into the land flowing with milk and honey, because at Kadesh Barnea, they did not really believe God when he said, go in and take the land. They said, oh no, we can't do that. And they said, we know better than you, is what they were saying. God, we know better than you. You said to go in. We said there'd be giants in the land, and they're bigger than us, and we look like grasshoppers compared to them. They're big, they're mean. Now, they had seen him wipe out the entire Egyptian army, and they still could not trust in this one they called their God. They were unbelievers, even though they went through all the religious motion. And actually, it says in the last day, they will have a form of godliness, but deny the power thereof. Don't be power deniers, because God says that's one of the signs of the last day, and there are a lot of people who are in churches, and I even know churches that says, God does nothing. We're just here to meet. We're here to rejoice, and we're here to talk, and we're here to share, and we're here to have socials, and we're here to raise money, and we're here to build bigger buildings, and we're here to do this, and send our kids on skiing trips, and we're here to do that and the other. But don't ever say God is doing this, or God can heal, or God can intervene in a situation. God doesn't do that anymore. I don't know where they pick this stuff up at, but if they're not reading the same Bible I am. So these people are having a form of godliness, but they're denying the power thereof. They've crept in. He jumps in on Sodom and Gomorrah then. Those people also were people who did not believe God. They did not believe God would actually punish them for what they chose to do. They didn't believe God had any right to come against them. And their main problem was, it was more than just disbelief, but it was this idea of, we can do what we want even against God and against nature. Now, so what they're doing is mocking the things that God called holy, or the order that God has established, and they're saying, we'll have no part of that. We will follow the rituals, which is great and fine and cute and lovely, but we will come over here, and in our private life, we will do what we choose to what we choose, and that will be what pleases God, whether he likes it or not. So they mock the things that even says, if you guys can read all this, they even mock the things they don't understand. They make fun of the archangels, they make fun of God, they just make fun of anything spiritual, and they just can't believe it. I saw a sign one time, a picture of a sign actually, and it was on a Universalist Unitarian church, and the sign said, bring your Bible and scissors. Bring your Bible and scissors. They have a form of godliness, but they deny the power thereof. And what they were teaching is, we can take scissors and cut out the passages we do not like. If you don't like that, cut it out. God doesn't expect us to follow certain rigid rules. God never expected us. You know, we have come a long way, and we are much more enlightened now. We have read the Greek philosophers. We have read the Roman emperors. We have read the modern philosophers. We've studied all this stuff, and now we are enlightened, so we understand better than what the Word of God says. So bring your scissors, and we'll cut out stuff that we don't believe applies to us. Having a form of godliness, but denying the power thereof, they do not believe in God. They don't believe what he says. Cain is the next one on the list. What did he do? He basically thumbed his nose at God and said, I will give you what I want, and you will take it, and you will like it. You can't tell me what to do. I don't think that you can rule, and if you read the rabbinical people on this, I mean the old rabbinical, you go back in there and read some of that, they honestly thought that he said things like, God will never enforce his laws against me or anyone else, so we can do as we please because he's not big enough to enforce it. So he made the offering he chose to give God. He didn't believe in God. Now we come down to the Balaam. We all know, we should all know, Balaam is the Gentile prophet, which the Jewish people believe is the equivalent to Moses. They have Moses, and they said their big dog was named Balaam, and look what Balaam did. He sold out for money, and what he went beyond just selling out for money, he also taught other people to sin and how to twist the law, how to twist the understanding, or how to twist the word that God had given, twist it in order that it may look like you have permission to do that which is evil. This is once again what the people that are certain people that are creeping into the churches are all doing the same thing. They don't believe God. They don't believe God has the power. They don't believe God has the audacity to go against them. They don't believe that they owe God anything. They don't believe they're responsible to God. They will give God what they want and he will like it. And then they teach other people how to do that same thing also. The last one, this is one of them I said that came out of the land of Egypt, and his name was Korah. He was a cousin to Moses and Aaron and Miriam. And he decided that he was just as good as anybody else, and he could do what he wanted, and he tried to take Moses' position and said, hey, I'm a Levite, I'm a cousin, I'm related. Am I not as good as they are? Doesn't God love me? Watch me, I will go and do Moses' job and I can do it just as well, if not better. Like it was he was running for an election or something. I can do this. And the ground opened up and it swallowed him. Korah overreached his power, overreached his position. It also talks about the angels and the stars in heaven who now are bound and dwell in darkness and those who left their place as being like these certain people. Now the whole point, if you didn't catch what's going on, the first thing is everyone, including the powers, the demons, the fallen angels, the sum total of this is first, they don't believe God. They don't believe God has the power, that God has the right, or has the nerve to go against them. They also believe that they should have anything they want, even though God said, no, this is not what you're supposed to have. Including the angels who said, he has given me, I'm just pulling this up, it's not a quote out of scripture, but say this angel says, God has given me an entire galaxy to shepherd and take care of all those stars for him, but I don't want that galaxy. I want that galaxy. He stuck me over here in a spiral arm galaxy, and I want one that's a disc shape. Therefore, I'm going to leave my post here and take up my post over there because that's what I want. And God says, that's not your assignment. That's not what I told you to do. I created you so that you could do this, and believe me, you are so well designed and fit to take care of this particular galaxy. Why do you want that one? Because I do. And God said, it's not going to happen. And so he's saying, there are people in our congregations all across the world who are coming in and telling us to do the same thing. If you don't like it, ignore it and grasp and get and grab whatever you want. You will get away with it. God will not punish you in any way. God is not mocked. The time is coming when he will actually bring judgment against all of those people. All of those angels, all of those demons. These certain people, these groups of people even, come to the church to corrupt it, to bring disbelief, to thumb their noses at God, and to try to teach us to follow after them and their teaching. But if I can find it real quick, he has another list, and he explains how we can see these people. Those certain people are grumblers, fault finders, following after their own lust. They speak arrogantly, and they flatter for the sake of gain or advantage. How do we know these people? They are grumblers, they're fault finders, they follow after their own lust, and they speak arrogantly, and they flatter people for their own gain. Now here's where I quit teaching, I go to meddling. We can be led astray, because that's what they come to do. And the ads in America on television are designed to lead us astray. The ads. We're not even talking about in the churches yet. We're talking about on TV. And have you noticed, if you watch television, that you're actually watching as many ads as you're watching television shows? For every 5 minutes of a TV show, you have to watch 8 minutes of an ad. And what do those ads tell you? They tell you that you are not happy, that you are not satisfied. They tell you that you stink, that your teeth aren't white, and you don't have enough hair. They tell you you shouldn't be gray. They tell you you should be size zero. They tell you you should look like a swimmer athlete, but don't smoke the bong. They tell you... I watched just an ad, and I'm watching it, and the guy says, everybody needs one of these gadgets. Look at this. This is wonderful. You take this little thing out here. You lay your onion on the table. You place your whatever over it, and you go, bam, 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 bam. Look, it sliced, it diced, it's ready to go. It even peels it. Just clear off that, and you've got the peeling. Throw it away, and look, you're ready now to throw it in the pot. And it's easy to clean up. Pull it apart. Look, you can plunge it all right in the water. You can wash each one of these blades. See how easy this is? Ladies, let me tell you that it makes your life a dream. And I'm going, oh, whoa, whoa. I could have took my Ginzu knife and sliced and diced and had the whole thing done and not had to mess with 20 minutes of taking that thing apart and washing it. I didn't have to go find it. I don't have to dry it. And I don't have to store it for the next time I want to do one clove of garlic. Better yet, buy a little jar with diced garlic already in it. But for $19.95, yes, you too can have this slicer, dicer, and this knife sharpener, and this Shazam, wowie, zowie cloth. You know, and you're just sitting there going, and they are preaching at us constantly that we are dissatisfied, and there are people who have fallen into it. Now, the three people I talked to have all said basically the same thing. So to put it all together, it's like this. They all said, God has shown me, God has told me, or God has led me to see that the American Christians are a bunch of whiners, ingrates, ungrateful people. One of them said, it's like God has invited us to a wonderful meal, 17 courses with our hors d'oeuvres, the finest meats, the finest vegetables prepared by the finest chefs, and we get to the end of it and we stomp our little feet and say, what? You didn't give us Neapolitan ice cream? How could you? And we are disgruntled and just toward God. And they all said the same thing. God has blessed us immensely and we are so dissatisfied. And the problem is we have so much that we treasure nothing. Nothing. Nothing is left that's just totally wonderful. When I was a kid, you know, we got socks, we got shirts for Christmas, we got this or that, but we would get one toy, and that toy was awesome. And we would play with that toy all year long, and we would play with the box of that toy, and we would look at the box of the toy that came in and think, well, we've got that toy. And we treasured that toy for at least 1 year until Mom stomped on it because we were shooting each other with it, or we broke it ourselves because David was beating me over the head with it. I made that up. But you get the idea. There were things that we had so much less that we actually appreciated and treasured the things that was given us. And we have been given so much that we are actually ungrateful toward our God. And every time I turned on the radio and the television, I heard people say the same thing. One person said it this way. He said, I was bored with life. I was totally dissatisfied with everything. I found no pleasure. I found no satisfaction in anything that I did. My life was miserable. And the doctor told me, you've got 2 years to live. And he said, I want you to know that every day is wonderful. Every sunset is awesome. Hearing children's laughter is great. It's just a switch in perspective. His life didn't change. The sun still set the same way. But it's that perspective that he was sitting there going, oh my gosh. Folks, we have been given so much and we just don't appreciate it. And what we need is a perspective change. And the next thing, let's just keep right on wading in, Doyle, is this. Even when we do say something positive, we will always spin it right at the last toward the negative. I will say, it's a beautiful day. The weathermen say it's going to be sunny all day, and the person's response is, yeah, but they lie. It's going to be a wonderful day out there. Yeah, probably for a while, but you know it's probably rain's a-coming. Wow, look, I bought a brand new car. See it, Doyle? Yeah, that's really cool. Oh, it's probably a lemon, though. I mean, every time it gets spun toward the negative side, and I hear Christians do the same thing. They'll say, God has blessed me in such a way, but probably things will get worse, but he'll see me through, but it won't be easy. This is a made-up story. It comes off the internet. I've read it several times, but I'm sure it's a made-up story. John is the kind of guy that you love to hate. He's always in a good mood and always has something positive to say. When somebody would ask him how he was doing, he would reply, if I were any better, I'd be twins. He was a natural motivator. If an employee was having a bad day, John was there telling the employee how to look on the positive side of the situation. Seeing this style really made me curious. One day I went up to him and I asked him, I don't get it. You can't be a positive person all the time. How do you do it? He said, each morning I wake up and say to myself, you have two choices today. You can be in a good mood or you can choose to be in a bad mood, and I choose to be in a good mood. Each time something bad happens, I can choose to be a victim or I can choose to learn from it. I choose to learn. And every time someone comes to me complaining, I can choose to accept their complaining, or I can point out the positive side of life and choose the positive side of life. That is what I do. Oh yeah, it's not that easy, I protested. Yes, it is, he said. Life is all about choices, and when you cut away all the junk, every situation is a choice. You can choose to react to the situations. You choose how people affect your mood. You choose to be in a good mood, or you choose to be in a bad mood. The bottom line is it's your choice on how you live your life. I reflected soon after I left the industry that he was in and started my own business. Years later, I heard that he was involved in an accident. He fell 60 feet. After 18 hours of surgery and weeks in intensive care, he was released from the hospital. I saw him 6 months after the accident. When I saw him, I asked him, "How are you?" He said, "If I was any better, I'd be twins. Do you want to see my scars?" I said, "No, I don't want to see your scars." But I did ask him how he could go through that, what went through his mind. The first thing that went through my mind was the well-being of my soon-to-be-born daughter. He replied, "Then as I lay on the ground, I remember I had two choices. I could choose to live or I could choose to die, and I chose to live. Weren't you scared? Did you lose conscience?" He continued, "The paramedics are great. They kept telling me I was going to be fine, but when they wheeled me into the ER, I saw the expressions on the faces of the doctors and nurses. I got really scared. In their eyes, I read, 'He's a dead man,' and I knew I needed to take action." "What did you do?" I said. "Well, there was this big burly nurse shouting questions at me. She asked me if I was allergic to anything, and I said yes. The doctors and nurses stopped working as they waited for my reply. I took a deep breath and I yelled, 'Gravity!' Over their laughter, I told them, 'I'm choosing to live. Operate on me as if I'm alive, not dead.' He lived thanks to the skills of the doctors, but also because of his amazing attitude. I learn from him every day the choice to live and choose to live fully. Attitude, after all, is everything." Matthew chapter 6, verse 34. "Therefore, do not worry about tomorrow, for tomorrow will worry about itself. Each day has enough problems on its own." You have to choose. Now, that is a Norman Vincent Peale thing. You have to choose, as if it's there and we're all alone in this. We're not alone. You have to choose. And if you're like me, okay, here's confession. If you knew me from years ago, you would know that I'm actually a very negative person. Very negative. I was taught to live that. I had been taught to read and I had been taught to believe. Now, when I started off in life, I was happy because I read books. And those books were Dick and Jane and Sally and Spot and Puff. Was Puff the cat? So we're all smiling. Yeah. Wasn't life great back then? Because we could read those things and we understood and we could do them. Run, Dick, run! Run, Doyle, run! I could run. Stop, I could stop. He had a red wagon, I had a red wagon. He had a teddy bear, I had stuffed animals. He had a dog, I had a dog named Tim. I had a dog named Mike. And whenever Puff got into Mother's powder, "Oh, Puff, isn't that funny?" So to this day, when my cat Steve gets into something, I look at it and I go, "Isn't that funny?" Because I had read and I compared myself to Dick and Jane and Sally and all of their possessions. And I had it. And they were happy and I were happy. And life was good till I started watching television with those commercials that said, "Oh, you need this if you want to be happy. You need those fizzies. You need those straws that when you suck the milk through it, it turns chocolate. The most vile tasting chocolate you've ever..." But you guys probably remember. Did you guys remember those straws? Really? Yeah, we got some people. They were straws. And you'd stick them in white milk and you could have strawberry and you could have chocolate. It was horrendous. But I just had to have those because that's what it took to make me happy. And I realized finally, I didn't actually realize what happened. I became a very, very negative person because if I had this, I would be happy. If I had that slicer and dicer, I would be happy. If I had PF Flyers, I could run faster and jump higher and they did not work. But then if I could have these Levi jeans, I would be cool. And if I had that yellow bolero sleeve shirt when I was a teenager, I would be all right. Or if I could wear white hop sacking pants with that paisley shirt, I would be mod. And if I had this car, my life would be great and the women would chase after me. And I had cars and they never chased. I was a very negative person, and I didn't realize how bad I was, honestly, because to tell the truth, most people around me were the same way. You know, my friends, neighbors, America, we all was thinking if we just had this one more thing, this would be the thing that would make us happy. Have you ever noticed that when you get a thing and you get it home, it doesn't look as good? You get that big honking diamond that sparkles and flashes. I told you people, I like sparkly things. But you get something that sparkles and flashes there in that store and you take it home to your house and it really just doesn't sparkle and flash like it did. It doesn't sound quite as good as it did. It's just not there. You know, and you have this big buildup. Oh, I want it, I want it, I want it. Yeah, I got it. Ooh. And it didn't work right. One day I went to see, drove several hours to see a family. Got there, got out of the car, was talking to him. He said, come on, let's go uptown. We've got to get some stuff. I said, yeah, I jumped in the car. And I said, you are a safe driver. He went ballistic. I hadn't been there 10 minutes. He went ballistic. And he said this. Doyle, you are the most negative person I have ever met, and I am tired of it, and I can't wait till you leave. You know, you see those commercials where the guy's like, putting the smoke out, extinguishing the fire. I mean, he ripped into me like, and I was like, I had never realized that I was negative. And I never told anybody about that for years and years. And I said, yep, that's what I said. Honestly, the whole time I was there, I barely spoke because I was first afraid he was going to kill me. It was that much of an explosion. And then I was like, am I really that negative? And then I would listen to myself, and yes, I was. And I was going to change myself. And no, I didn't. Finally, it came to the place of, God, I'm a negative person. And I twist everything to the negative side. And I'll keep doing it because a leopard can't change its spots. And if you don't do something about it, I'm just going to be negative all my life. Haven't I fooled most of you people? And it was like, Doyle, what do positive people do? They smile. I can do that. You keep practicing, you'll get better at it. They whistle. They sing songs. I'm not very good at that. They decide to be positive. They make a decision. And one of the... God told me in His Word that all things will work together for my good. All things. No matter how disastrous they seem. And I want you to know what... You guys was here. This is gone. I'll make it through this. One of the hardest things that ever happened was the day my mom died. And I said, God, I don't know how you're going to do it. But you told me that you will bring something good out of this. We miss her. And yet I can see things that have happened and growth that I would have never seen, I don't think. But God doesn't lie, and He will. And someday I expect Him to say, Doyle, here is something positive. And I want you to see that as a direct result And what you went through, here is a positive. And I know it doesn't offset, but it's still a positive. And it will grow. This positive will continue to grow and grow and grow. Folks, when I die and go to heaven,
yes,
and God calls me up and he says, I want to talk to you about Trinity Church. Now, I'm throwing it off on you guys. I don't want him to say, Doyle, under your tutelage, they remain one of the most negative, disrespectful, wanton, disgruntled, grumblers, gripers, arrogant, dissatisfied, petulant people in America. I want him to say, you know, there came a time in that church when there was an attitude change and they started appreciating what I did and what I have done and what I did ever after that. And you know, one of the biggest things about appreciating God is to start paying attention. Just pay attention when you're walking. Did you hear that bird? I've got some birds out in my house and they say, Judy, 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 Judy. I don't know what kind of birds, but that's what it sounds like they're saying. I don't even know Judy. Where is she? I've got a car, Judy. Are you following me? Judy, 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 Judy. You know, snow. But you know what was so neat about it is you could go outside and snow makes everything so quiet. This is awesome. And you could hear the snow when the wind blew falling off tree limbs. That is so neat. And that is what made growing up so wonderful, because everything was fresh and new, and anything that moved, shined, sparkled, twitched, or made a noise, us kids gathered around and go, wow. And we looked at it. So just paying attention to the details and the things that are going on, like that guy said, when the doctor told me I had 2 years, every sunset became awesome. There's a ritual down in Florida Ernest Hemingway started. I'm not suggesting we start it, but hey, if you guys want to, I'm willing. This one tavern, just before sunset, everybody gets a drink. They all go out to the pier and they toast the sunset. And they sit there and watch it and just appreciate its beauty. Granted, they're toasted too. And that might help some, but it's that whole idea, they understand at least one thing. Take some time and just appreciate, not what man has done, because man will tell you, that's not good enough. Now that you're using melon on your hair, you really need to have fruities made with cranberries. And as soon as you get that, no, no, you need something that's made with mink oil. No, no, no. Heaven forbid that you would ever use mink oil. It's got to be coconuts. Put the lime in the coconut. You know, and it's just, no matter what we make, they immediately say that's not good enough. Go outside and look at the sunset and tell me that that ain't good enough. Go outside and listen to them birds sing and tell me that ain't good enough. Go outside and enjoy some of this stuff that God has made and tell me that he didn't do a good enough job. People, don't embarrass me when I get to heaven. Please.